All right, thank you. We're ready to go ahead with the third matter on the oral argument calendar. And for that case, we have counsel for appellant here in present. There was no brief submitted by the respondent, so we won't be waiting for the respondent's counsel. Would the marshal please call the third case?
Case number A221608, Ahrensburg v. Ahrensburg.
And counsel for appellant, I'll just make a couple of quick remarks. Feel free to go ahead and stand at the podium if you'd like to adjust it or whatever makes you more comfortable to begin our conversation. So I just want to remind you of a couple of things. We do record today's argument, and it is later made available on the court's website. And so we ask you to start your argument by giving us your name as well as the name of the client that you're here representing. And then you'll note, I think, on the podium that there is a clock that's ticking down, so that will give you your time that's available for our conversation. So with that, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is John Burns, and I represent the appellant, Amy Sayavong. These parties were married in April of 2018. Their son was born in August of 2018. They separated in March of 2019, and in August of 2021, Ms. Sayavong filed for divorce. This case proceeded to trial, and the court issued its judgment and decree on October 3, 2022. This appeal follows. And on appeal, we are arguing that this court abused its discretion in two ways. One, by awarding these parties joint physical custody and an equal parenting schedule, and two, in how it set child support. The court abused its discretion in applying the best interest standard to conclude that joint physical custody and a week-on, week-off schedule fit this case. And I have provided in our brief five examples of why that was the case. The first was that the court was to consider the needs and development of the child.
So, counsel, before you go into your detailed analysis, and there are a total of 12 best interest factors, right? And I know you're familiar with it. I read your brief as challenging the district court's analysis on five of those factors.
That is correct.
Right? And there are, I think, the district court found four neutral factors. You're not discussing that. You're not raising them on appeal, right?
I am not.
Okay. I just want to make sure we're reading your brief the same. And then there are three factors that favor joint custody. I read your brief as not challenging three of them.
That is
so,
also correct.
And that's like 9, 11, and 12. That's what my notes reflect anyway.
Yes.
So that's why you want to go ahead now, I think, and talk about the ones you do dispute, right?
And it's good that our math matches up, that there are the five that I have as well, Your Honor. So I accept that. So let me start with the needs and development. The court performed this analysis, but it wrongfully shifted the burden to mom to show how the child would be harmed by father's proposal for joint physical custody and an equal parenting schedule. And the court can't do that. In cases like this, where father presents no evidence of anything he's ever done to meet this child's needs, it is a reversible error for the court to effectively impose a presumption in favor of joint physical custody. And that doesn't exist under our present legislature.
So, counsel, when I hear that argument, I read your brief, I went back and read the district court's entire discussion under that factor, and you're certainly accurate when you say there is this reference to no evidence that father does not support, no evidence that father does not support or foster the child and allow culture. But the district court also does say, I mean, there's more to it is what I'm trying to say, right? Reading it in context, the district court actually goes on to say that both parents' houses I skipped a section. The court finds that the child will be able to explore his cultural and spiritual needs at both parents' houses and will not be harmed by an equal parenting time schedule.
That is in there.
Right.
So my point on that, Your Honor, is that zero evidence. And now, let me take a step back. I wasn't the trial counsel. So like the three of you, I had to look at the transcript, I had to look at the exhibits, I had to study that. And there is zero evidence provided by Dad that he has ever done anything to meet the needs and development of the child. And so the shifting of the burden of, Well, Dad didn't put any evidence in, but you know what? Mom didn't show me that Dad can't do it. That is the point of the burden shifting. And the court here is well aware that we don't have any presumption in favor of joint physical custody in Minnesota. The legislature often gets bills coming in that say, we should do it this year, or we should create some sort of new law, but that's not the case. And it appears to me that in that section, and also in the section of parental participation, that the court has created a burden shifting. In that section, my second point, it says, mom needs to show, quote, why Dad is unable to care for the minor child.
I'm sorry, which factor are you addressing now, Counselor?
Yeah, if you look at, it's in the decree, page 5 of our brief, page 4, paragraph 15F of the decree,
okay,
talking about the parental participation. And just like the section that we were talking about previously, Your Honor, this one also says, mom hasn't shown why Dad is unable to care for the minor child. And that is, once again, starting from the wrong place. The court is starting from the presumption of, I'm going to do joint custody unless mom gives me information why I shouldn't. And that is an improper burden shifting. And when I say I couldn't find anything in the transcript or the record, that's after my analysis, going through the testimony, going through the exhibits. That simply doesn't exist. Under that same section of parental participation, the court also seems to have an intent to punish the mother for what it perceived to be her role in limiting father's parenting time in the months leading up to the divorce.
Now, let me just stop you for a moment, counsel, and make sure, again, I'm reading your brief correctly. It seemed to me when I read your brief that you are acknowledging that mother did, in fact, restrict father's parenting time, correct? That,
in fact, I am.
Okay.
And so my argument is that father also has some responsibility here. Mother did restrict
I want you to stay on what mother's role was, though. Mother does acknowledge she restricted father's parenting time, correct?
That is correct.
And the district court, as I read the district court's findings, the district court went on to say that mother did not do so in the best interests of the child.
I don't recall that exact language.
Well, I'll point it out to you. So okay. It's on the page we were just talking about,
right.
The addendum at 5.
Thank you.
Right? It was not because mother believed it was in the best interests of the child to restrict the parenting time. Now both sides quibble about what the reasons were for the restriction.
Correct. That is correct.
But the district court went beyond that and said that was not in the best interests of the child.
That is the district court's finding. And that's where I think there was that intent by the court to punish mother. But the point that was overlooked are two things. One, Dad had refused to pay a level of support. These parties were separated for 30 months. And so this isn't and that's why I gave the quick list of the dates at the beginning. This was a long-term separation, and Dad never approached the court to set an interim schedule, never took any action to formally request a level of parenting time. In fact, it was Mom herself who actually was the one that filed for divorce to move the case forward. And I think that Dad has some responsibility because he did not follow through on the fact that the parenting schedule, as in most divorces, before a court gets involved or before agreements can be reached, the parties disagreed on what the parenting should be. The third factor under the custody argument is that the court needed to review the benefit detriment to the child.
I guess I'd like you to go back to the parental participation factor, which I think of as factor number 6, all right? So you're acknowledging mother's role in restricting parenting time. I appreciate that it's a complicated situation and that it's not one parent. This is a cooperative co-parenting relationship of necessity, right?
It is, okay. Of necessity.
And I understand that, and I think that's what you're trying to point out.
Yes.
Having said all of that, in understanding that you're criticizing the district court's findings on parental participation, but it seemed to me the district court was trying to put this parental participation in context. So pointing out that there was a period of time where father could not have participation because his parenting time was restricted.
And I think if the finding had stopped there, that could have been accurate. But when I read the transcript, father says that even during what he alleges was the week-on, week-off schedule, that he had his girlfriend at the time watching the minor child, that he was still going out of the state to do construction jobs. So what I'm saying is that entire parental participation credibility determination has to take into account statements that father himself offered in his own testimony.
Right, and of course you appreciate that our role isn't to find facts.
Correct.
And our role is not to weigh the evidence. And it sounds to me like you're asking us to do that. No. I mean, I do appreciate the careful review that you've done, you know, by reading the transcript, pointing out pieces of evidence that go another direction. But as I said, you know, in reading the district court's order as a whole, it seems to me the district court heard that testimony and made some very specific credibility findings, mostly in favor of the father and against the mother. We're not going to second guess those.
No.
So help me out. I mean, how are you going to succeed in your argument, not just that we somehow find a legal error in the district court's decision, like the presumption, but that we would actually, you know, reach the what you asked us to do was to make the finding that these best interest factors favor mother's sole custody, which I just struggle with that argument. So maybe you can help me out.
I'm going to try.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. And I admit in my brief, I say the finding of credibility to father is entitled to deference on appeal. I'm not asking you to put on the shoes of the trial court. But what I'm saying is that there has to be some evidence. When the court makes these conclusory statements and says, we have to give dad the chance to fix the relationship and the damage that must have occurred. Nobody said there was any damage to the relationship anywhere in the trial.
Isn't the district court allowed to infer that from the length of time that mother restricted father's parenting time? Help me out, why not?
No, I don't think they can. I think unless
because
no parent, nobody testified, nobody said one time that relationship had been damaged, that there was any negativity to it. Dad himself never brought that up, and he had the opportunity. The court made that finding out of the air. They're simply, and that was where I did struggle, and I appreciate the court recognizing. I really studied the transcript to say, where can the court get to, you know, these different conclusory statements that are thrown into different parts.
Well, counsel, let me go back for a minute, because I read this to say that that ensure the father and child can repair any damage, not that there was damage. Again, going back to the unilateral decision of your client to cut off his parenting time. So any damage isn't the same as saying the child's been damaged.
I read it to say that there had been damage, and that what the court was, and I called it punishing mom, or maybe punishing mom and child, to say, I'm going to put this new schedule because we've got to put a Band-Aid on it. We've got to fix what has already happened. And my point to the three of you is that there was simply no evidence. I know as a trial lawyer in divorce cases, I'll often bring in people to say, and have you seen a difference in the child? And yes, the child is acting out in daycare, or the child is distant when he spends time with me because he's, you know, being alienated with mom. But there was nothing to support that statement.
Well, the statement, again, was any damage to their relationship. But I read that to mean the district judge doesn't know, isn't saying that there was damage to the relationship, but is saying due to that unilateral decision to cut off parenting time, or at least to significantly minimize it, that there could be, because they don't know each other as well now. They're getting farther apart. The child's growing up.
Yeah.
And I have a hard time saying that's an abuse of discretion to make that finding.
And it's our argument that goes too far. That becomes speculative, that becomes a guesswork by the judge, and that there has to be some foundation in the testimony. I'm going to move to the child support as well. So we have the legal arguments, and I have what I think are the unsubstantiated findings, arguments on the custody. On the child support, just from big picture, we argue that the court did not make appropriate findings on gross income. Dad testified that he works up to 45 hours a week, and the court just locked him in at 40.
I think his testimony was sometimes. Isn't that right, counsel?
He says he never works less than 40, and he works between 40 and 45. But there was no adjustment. He also says that he typically gets a $1,000 a month bonus, and that's not included in the gross income calculation. Health insurance, Dad had a non-joint child that required him to carry the health insurance at a family level. So that to then turn around and say that Mom needs to pay $92 to Dad for the family coverage creates a windfall to Dad on something he already had to carry. There's a limitation of child care. Both parties say it's about $300. The court sets it at $98. And then there are the arguments on retroactive child support that really go to what this court might do on a remand. And as my time is expiring, that's where I'll leave you. It is our request that this court reverse and remand back the decisions that were made on physical custody, the equal parenting schedule, and the establishment of the child support. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks very much for the